Parshas Vayechi, as well as doubling with Asar B'Tevis, I'm going to try to discuss a little bit of both elements and try if we can to bring home a message, an idea that we can appreciate not only on the day that they both share, but in future days to come as well. Ironically, Vayechi, which means the life of, is when we speak about Yaakov dying. We see it before by Chai Sarah, her life, we talk about it really her burial. What's pshat? How can we refer to these parshas to describe our great leaders passing the world as he was, again, of course, the first part of the parsha, we know that's true, that when you have a first part of parsha, usually, oftentimes, we share whatever the first word is, we say that's the parsha's name, not always, but often, but you think it's a little bit backwards, after all, when Sarah dies, we say Chai Sarah, we're celebrating her life, we should discuss her death. But Yechi Yaakov, as he's about to die, which means he's alive, he's really dying. So the answer is, not my own answer, but I've heard beforehand, is that in general, we believe that when tzaddikim die, they're still alive. When a tzaddik makes it, it's like he's alive. Whatever reason it may be. Maybe because his legacy is still left behind. Maybe because of the generations left behind him. Whatever it is, when we discuss the death of Sarah, the greatest comment we can give her is that she's still alive, even when she's not alive anymore. That's the biggest chiddush. However, for a Rishayim, it's exactly the opposite. When a Rasha's alive, he's already like he's dead. A Rasha, we don't value at all. It's like he's dead even when he's still living. He doesn't do anything productive for the world at all. So the greatest way you can comment someone is that even when they're not alive anymore, you can talk about their life. Chai Sarah. Vayechi Yaakov. That's the celebration of their life. Now, how do we get to a stage of being considered like that? Okay, we're not going to be Yaakov. The Avos period is already finished. We're not female, so we're not going to be Sarah either. But how does one get to a state when he passes from the world, his legacy will continue? Something I think every person in the world wants that. So people have kids sometimes. They have kids in order to have a future. And people have memorials that they made after their own name, or they make statues because they want to be remembered when they're gone. Besides those physical ways, what can we do? How can we behave in a way that our legacy will last beyond us? So the question I want to start with. Question number one, our legacy. How do we continue that going on? Number two question is that Yaakov goes and calls Yosef in originally, and he says to Yosef, do me a favor. Please bury me in Mitzrayim. He makes him take a shvuah, he makes him take a swear. You know, tachas yirechi, I want you to hold my part of my body over here, where the bris mila is, as a simon, that you're telling me, Emes, you're going to do it for me. I'm making you promise, holding a mitzvah in your hand, that you're going to do this. Number one, Yosef was Yaakov's son. Why would he think he wouldn't do it? He's asking his son for a favor. Why would he not do it? Number two, even Yosef wasn't his son. Yosef was, we know, he's ish emunim. He's a trustworthy guy. He's been running a country, providing for a foreign nation his entire life, the last number of years. It would make logical sense he would continue to provide for his loved ones, like his father, for example. And number three, Yaakov was a special person, even if a guy was not such a great guy. You'd imagine he would listen to what Yaakov wanted to do. After all, Yaakov was a special person. So we have a threefold question for the same question, which is, the moment that a father says to his son, my dying wish, I have a dying wish, what son wouldn't listen to the dying wish of the father? Especially when that son is Yosef, that father was Yaakov. Why was there need to hold the mila, hold tachas yirechi, promise me, swear on this. I gotta trust you. I need you to swear on this. Why did they go so far? Was it not that he was Yaakov and he was Yosef? Should that be enough to just ask your son? Even if it wasn't two great people, but it was. It should be enough. Why tachas yirechi? Question number two. That question was asked in the Sam Derech. Simcha Zissel, which is a student of mine named Zev Weshra, gave it to me a number of years ago. It's a great sefer. I recommend it highly to everybody. Final question, which I speak about this topic every year, but I'm only speaking about a blurb this year, not a lot, is Yaakov and Yosef both were victims of favoritism in their life. They both were treated certain ways, and they both suffered for it tremendously. Whether Rivka protecting Yaakov, and in the end Yaakov has to run away when he steals a bracha for many years away from his parents. Yosef, on the receiving end of that favoritism as well, who gets sold at the creek later on. We have Yaakov giving a bracha to Ephraim and Manasseh. And Yaakov gives a bracha, and he switches his hands around. And Yosef says to his dad, you got it wrong. You put the hand, the right hand, the wrong guy. I put Manasseh right to the right hand, put it on him. What does Yaakov say?
I know what I'm doing.
He says, I know what I'm doing. You know what? He's good. But he's much better. He'll be better one day. Could you have a... With Mechilas Kvod Yaakov, I don't mean this literally, but could you have a worse parenting technique than that? He's great. He's good, but this one is much better than that one. It sounds cruel. Having Yaakov possibly, after all he's been through, both with himself and with his own son, having done this beforehand, and been a victim and suffered through his favoring of his child, how is it possible he can now favor it so explicitly, so clearly, Ephraim over Manasseh? Doesn't make any sense at all. Question number three. So repeat our questions quickly. Number one question. One question we asked was, why or how do we become a state of being when we can be called Vayechi even when our days are numbered? How do we get to that state? Second question is, why was Yaakov so insistent on making him swear enough? Like, it's Yosef, you're Yaakov, isn't that enough? And number three question is, how come Yaakov was sitting there showing so much love to Ephraim in front of Manasseh, in Manasseh's own ability to hear it? Question number three. Okay. To answer these questions, start with pointing out that Yaakov was a great inventor. To this day, his invention still stands, still lasts. What did Yaakov invent? Anyone know? Yaakov created something that to this day still lasts, either fortunate or unfortunate. He invented that. But he did say Shema, it's true, but it wasn't on his invention, I don't think. Maybe it was. He invented illness. Illness. Before he became sick, there was never someone sick before. You would sneeze and you would die. That's what Chazal tell us. He invented illness. Why did he want illness? For what reason did he want to become sick? So Chazal tell us, when you're sick and you know when your days are going to end, I mentioned to you guys before, if you knew when the last day of your life would be, you do things differently than you would a typical day. Yaakov wanted to be Mesader. He wanted to arrange his life before he left the world, arrange his family, give parting words to everybody. And therefore, he davened to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, please make me sick before you make me die. And Hashem invented or created that behavior in the world from that point forward. We to this day suffer or are rewarded, depending on how you look at it, with knowing sometimes, not always, but sometimes in advance of when we die, we know we're going to get there soon. We understand, we feel it. Okay. To be Mesader, to arrange his life. Besides being able to arrange his life, he also had another schus that he had. He was able to mevarach all of his children. Can you imagine, again, unfortunately, I had a friend of mine, a very close friend of mine, recently lost his father. So, and they knew where he was going to go, and his father called him in. Before he died, he said to his son, I said, I just want to tell you how proud I am of you. I'm so proud of you, how you live your life. To be able to tell your kids such words, I'm proud of you, words, you know, before your father goes, tell your father, like, I love you so much. That's priceless. It's precious. So Yaakov was able to tell his son's final words of comfort, words of chizuk, to tell each one of them what you're, imagine to tell your child what your talent is in the world. This is your talent. Go with it. Yaakov was lucky enough to be able to provide his family with those words of encouragement and those words of explaining what your task is in life. And because of that, his children to this day, we still know what the tribe's koach was, what their power was, and they're able to live with that in their mind. You see over here, though, is that Yaakov was very much into taking planning and precaution before you do anything. Before I leave the world, my final thing I want to be is I want to plan for that event. The significance of this year over here I'm going to give you today is all about the importance of planning properly. Before anything comes your way, before you have a chance to do anything, you want to plan for it. That theme is going to take us through the shmooze for the next 15 minutes or so. And appreciate, hopefully answer all the questions we asked already. Yaakov knew how significant it was to plan in advance. Just an example regarding sports. You know, I give sports examples, so every time I give an example, is that we know that in general, people say that the way you practice is how you will play. If you practice well, except for Allen Iverson, who chooses not to practice, practice when I want to practice, he says. Besides him, everyone else, the way you practice is usually how you play. If you practice with, you know, aggressive, be aggressive when you play. It's hard to practice haphazardly, and then in the end, to play at full strength. It's hard to. You practice as you play. It's a thing we live with in our life. We prepare for things to come. We prepare well. We'll have positive things to come out of it. We prepare poorly. We won't be ready for the ultimate last 2 minutes of the game. We won't be able to succeed. We'll fall apart at the very end. The Sam Derech says this is exactly the reason why Yaakov made Yosef make this Shavua. The second question that I asked you, why do you make him make a Shavua? Well, he was Yaakov and he was Yosef. It should be enough to go on to rely on each other. That Yaakov knew that when he left the world, Yosef would have times he had to go back to the next to Paro and convince Paro to let him go. And he had to, you know, for the viceroy to leave on a very serious trip to bury even their, you know, his father, take a lot out of the country. And it wouldn't be so pusha. It would not be so pusha that at the end of the day, he'd be able to actually carry out and bury his father. He wanted to, for sure. He for sure wanted to. But that he'd be able to, it was hard to. So Yaakov said, I'm not going to even leave it in the Yetzer Hara of yours. I'm going to make you swear that you'll do it. That's an example we have from Masechet Parsha. Yehuda could have said, I promise I'll bring Binyamin back. I promise I will. And I really wanted to. But the moment pushed him to shove, if he hadn't put his own mouth on the line, maybe he wouldn't have done it. Says Yaakov to Yosef, I can't rely on man, even you, who loves me. But if things are out of our hands sometimes, I'm going to make sure that nothing can be out of our hands in this one. You must swear to me, on a makom of mitzvah, that you will do everything possible, no matter how hard, no matter how much power objects to it, no matter what else is going to happen, you must make sure that I'm taken out of Mitzrayim and buried in Eretz Yisrael. Once again, Yaakov realized planning for his own burial, I'm going to make my son Yosef make a shvuah, though it's an embarrassment that I've made my own son make a shvuah, and that he's so ish emunim. And he loves me, he wants to, but I must make you swear anyways, because if I don't make you practice well, if I don't plan in advance properly, you're not going to be able to do this. It's going to be challenging. To skip over from our parsha, we'll get back in a minute, to Asar HaTavis. There are three things that happened today that we are mourning over, that we're fasting over. Number one was a Septuagint. Told me he was a king. He demanded 72 Zakenim go to an area, and he made them translate the Torah to Greek. Now, the biggest chiddush, the miracle, mamash miracle, is that every single one of them translated the exact same way, with the exact same changes that they each made. The Gemara Megillah discussed even some changes that they made, with exact same changes that each made to the text, to not offend anyone who would be reading it who understood Greek now. You imagine that being a cause celebration. It's mamash miracle. We don't celebrate it. Why not? Because in the theory, this action, though very impressive, resulted in a tremendous amount lost from the Torah. Imagine I go to the Mona Lisa. I mentioned this yesterday. Mona Lisa looked like last week. I mean, I take a picture of the Mona Lisa, and I give you the Kodak of the Mona Lisa. Now, are you going to frame it and hang it on your wall? No. But why not? It's a picture of the Mona Lisa. The answer is because it's just a picture of a picture. It's true that making the Torah, translating it to Greek, it's still the Torah, but it's a shadow of itself. Because every single layer of Kedusha in the Torah, when you take out the letters of Kedusha, the Hebrew, and you translate to a regular language, English, or Greek for that matter, it loses some of its thing that Hashem made it this way, and you took it a step away from that. The action itself is impressive. What it leads to is not so special anymore, though. It's less special than beforehand, so we don't celebrate that. When it came to the second thing that happened in our Shabbat Tavis, we say, was that Yerushalayim was sieged. The walls were not broken until for Shvesra Thomas. For a year and a half, Yerushalayim was under siege. Now, why are we mourning that? We fought valiantly. Only a year and a half later, they break through. Because it was the beginning process of being part of planning that led to disaster for us, which we celebrate commemorate every single year within 3 weeks. So though it's true that in this day of the year was a siege which we defended well, but the Bible says it began the stage, it began the planning stages of things that would be disastrous in the future for us. And the final third thing that happened was that Ezra Sofer died, which caused a certain end of an era in Klal Yisrael, and it led to lacking leaders that we once had. All three examples of Zarbatavis, all three things that happened, were examples of things that were themselves in a vacuum events, but the bigger ramifications felt when those events are finished. It's all about planning. You can plan positively, and the planning part is so important to the crucial future good results, as Yaakov did on more than one occasion with calling his son to give him bracha, with making Yosef swear. You can plan negatively or have things that happen that will lead to negative things, like the story we have of Asar HaTavis. All three examples are examples of things that happened in a vacuum, you know, not the worst thing in the world, but they led to tremendous disaster and catastrophe among Klal Yisrael in the future. I want to focus now on preparing properly. The importance to do things, whether right now or later on, that will be so significant to our future. I'm going to answer the third question. I answered the second question already. Sam Derech explains why make a shua, because he needed to make sure that nothing, planning had to be foolproof planning to make sure it happened. Why did Ephraim get a special bracha over Menashe? And why did he say for Menashe like that? I'm going to answer the second part as much, but I'll answer the first part. The Emes L'Yaakov, I say this every single year, and I usually go with my entire shmuz about this topic, I'm not going to do it right now, but I'll just mention quickly in passing. The Emes L'Yaakov points out that when Yosef had Ephraim and Menashe, he was like two different people. When he had Ephraim, he was one way, sorry, Menashe, he was a certain way, and when he was Ephraim, he was very different than when he had Menashe. He says that the word Ephraim is an Egyptian name. Every Egyptian name you think of, Shifra, Pua, Potiphar, Tzachnas Panech, there's certain letters that come up every single time, of which Ephraim shares a lot to them. Ah, for the paro, That Safna Panea, Shifra, Pua, these Pei, Reish, Alfayim, those letters come up often. Ephraim was named with an Egyptian name. Oh, your name Ephraim, by the way? No offense, you are. No offense. Ephraim is not a Hebrew name, it's an Egyptian name. All the letters and the sounds of Egyptian names were used with Ephraim. With Menashe, it was a Jewish name. And even when he named the name, he said, "You help me forget Beis Avi." Yaakov's name is on Yosef's lips when he names his son Menashe. But when he names Ephraim, he doesn't say anything about his father's house. He's completely forgotten about it, so to speak. You know who was the translator between Yosef and Paro? Not Ephraim, because he didn't know Hebrew. Menashe. Ephraim didn't even know the language that Yaakov says. He didn't even know. And therefore, you know what Yaakov did? He learned extra Torah with Ephraim. He learned extra with him. Do you know why? Because of all the people who would be in trouble in the future, it would be Ephraim's descendants who were in the most trouble. Because Ephraim did not grow up like the Shvatim. Even like Menashe. He wasn't named like Menashe. Says Yaakov Avinu, "I must give extra bracha to Ephraim right now to allow him the chance to survive the challenge that will be standing ahead of him." He'll have a lot of challenges ahead of him. He's the one who's least connected with me and my family. And therefore, I give my right hand bracha to make sure Ephraim becomes what he's supposed to become in the end of the day. I need him to become okay. And right now, he's the least likely to survive. So with proper planning, even though Menashe will be embarrassed, and I have a whole story about that later on, how Menashe would do it, how he was able to listen and not be upset about it, listen to the last few years. But regarding this one, Ephraim needed the kolach of bracha, because otherwise the planning wouldn't be enough. Ephraim may have gone and not survived the challenges of being in the exile for so many years. And the Baruch Hashem, he did. The key to planning is something called a siyag. A siyag means a fence. You have to have a fence in your life. The Rabbeinu Yonah brings down here at Yavos, asu siyag l'Torah. It means to make a fence around the Torah. If you care enough about something, you make a fence to protect it. L'mashal, mashal. Imagine you're doing construction in your backyard. And you have an open backyard, a nice yard. People play football there sometimes. Kids play in the backyard. And you have a hole that you dig that's 5 feet deep to do something in your basement. Now you can do one of two things. You can either section off exactly to limit the amount of space of your backyard that's used up, to just section off with a little wire around the exact part of the hole, which will hopefully deter people from going there. Or square off on each side extra feet so no one comes close to falling in the hole. If you love your kids, you will section off much more than the whole area to protect them in case they go for a ball and they hit the barrier and they take a step into it and then bounce back, they didn't fall 5 feet down. If you mamash love a Kadosh Baruch Hu, you love him, you desire to live a life of Kedusha, then you create for yourself siyagim, you plan. You plan to make sure that you have things in your day that will assist you not to fall down a hole. Just an example. I'll give you a silly example. Waking up for many in the morning. I've heard more than one time someone said to me, "The Madrich didn't wake me up this morning." Okay, sorry. I don't know what happened. Oversight. Why would you rely? Make a siyag. Set an alarm. In case I don't even wake up when he wakes me up, I'll set an alarm for 10 minutes later. And if I wake up, always naturally, I hit my alarm and I fall back asleep again. I snooze, which you should never do. So put it somewhere else in the room. Make a siyag for yourself. If you're challenged in certain ways, but you don't want to be bad, you don't want to make a mistake, then make a siyag. Make sure that you make a fence for your life. Help yourself out a little bit. I want to tell you a siyag that happened since Parsha. You see, it's mind-blowing. Now I'm going to rush to the last part. Unfortunately, I have so much I want to share with you. Chabal for me. The Das in this Parsha has the following pshat. I'll throw the question out so you can talk about it over Shabbos if you want to. But I'll tell you some pshat he says on it. Did Yaakov ever know what happened to Yosef? Does Yaakov ever know Yosef was sold by the brothers? Yes or no? The Parsha, we don't find anything. We do find the brothers say Yaakov to Yosef, "Dad told me to tell you not to take revenge on us." But did we ever see Dad finding out about it? Says the Das came a following shot. It said that they had to call Yosef to tell him that Yaakov was sick. You know why? Because Yosef never was alone with his father anymore. You know why?
Scared.
What was he scared of? What if my father was saying to me, "Where have you been last? What happened? How did that happen? Tell me what happened." Listen to this siyag that Yosef and Tzadik made. It's a place called a Tzadik. He refused to ever be alone with his father from the time his father came to Mitzrayim, lest he ever be encountered with the chashash of telling about his brothers. That's a siyag. I mean, it's a very big siyah. But it shows you, Yosef would love to stand with his dad and bond and learn the Harus again. But he used the excuse that he couldn't go because he was in charge of the whole entire country, lest his father ever say to him, "How did you get here? Tell me the story. It must be amazing." He made a siyag because he didn't want to ever have to tell his father about the brothers. That's called planning for the future. I'll skip. Okay. We see, when you plan properly, the desired results will often come. Often. He succeeded. Yaakov succeeded. Ephraim survived. Yosef buried him. And everything goes well when you plan for it properly. That's an example. You have players who wear the same pair of socks every time they play, with the same undershirt under their jerseys. Michael Jordan used to wear a Carolina thing under his jersey all the time. You have these superstitions. People listen to these big Bosey headphones. They listen to whatever the things are called. They listen to the same pregame music. You have rituals. Because you believe, I played well last time I did this thing, I'll do it again. Practice. Everyone, not only Jews, but everyone believes the way that you plan for is how you will succeed, ultimately speaking. And we learn this in the body. The body, what it does, it breaks things down. It throws some things away. That's called when you go to the bathroom. It keeps other things so that your body has the nourishment it requires and it gets rid of the filth it doesn't need in order to survive. It plans by breaking it down. God created the system in the world so we can learn from it. But I want to show you one thing that God does that's wrong. There's a disease where sometimes the body will attack itself inappropriately. There's a couple that I know that they can't have kids because whenever his wife becomes pregnant, body attacks the fetus, thinking that it's a foreign substance in the body, and attacks it and kills it. It's planning. It's protecting. It's planning. But it's off. It's planning wrong. It results in the desired result. It saves the body from the sin. That thing was supposed to be a child in the end. So planning is significant, but when you plan, you can also plan the wrong way. And you can ruin everything by planning the wrong way. I asked him the following question. Are we planning for the right things in our life? Are we fighting the right fights in our life? Are we seeing the things we should be seeing in our life? To go somewhere, to see something, whether you do it wrong or not, are you planning the right way in your life? I went there, but I didn't do anything at all. Makabo, where's the siyag? I'm not going to do it. Then you don't care so much about it. If you care about it, you make a siyag for it. Someone said to me last year, my friend talks to me in davening all the time. You know what the siyag is? Switch your seat. It's not rocket science. Whatever it is you're working on, plan for it properly, and you will achieve that which you want. To go somewhere where you're concerned and afraid you could be affected, but say, you know what? I'm going to be strong. You're not planning properly. And you may be strong, you may even survive, but you will not thrive. If you would like to thrive and to succeed to the most that you can, then take Yaakov's lead. Distance yourself from the challenges around you. Take Yosef's lead. 22 years, whatever it was when Yaakov was not 20 years, but 37 years when he was together with his father, Mitzrayim. He didn't even have a chance to sit and have a cup of coffee together. Because what it may lead to? We give a bracha to our children every single Shabbos. You receive it from your parents. And Miller did it actually for us earlier on this year, you know, from Kippur. Similar to Ephraim and Menashe. Also, Ephraim and before Menashe. You know why? Why do I give bracha to be like Yosef or like the Avos? Because Ephraim and Menashe are the first people in the world who grew up outside of the Avos' house. They grew up somewhere. And they had challenges they faced being the vice, where they had anything they wanted in life they could have. They're the princes of the country. Anything they want. And they became Ephraim and Asher, became tzaddikim. How'd they do it? With bracha of Yaakov certainly helped. With a place like Goshen, where the Jewish people moved to stay away from everything all around them, they were able to realize that the world's full of great things. As Rami Miller pointed out in the Shmuz the other day, my job is to appreciate the greatness of them and keep a distance of the things I should not be going close to. To walk right past it and not be over the Isser is not enough. It's not enough. You must protect yourself if you care. Because you wouldn't let your kid play in your backyard with a hole that you didn't ward off properly. You are worth more than you give yourself credit for. God gave you your neshama. He gave it to you. What are you doing to ward off things that are dangerous for you? The fact that you didn't do the thing wrong, but you were there, that's not good enough. You must make sure you make a siyag for yourself. And that's the answer to our first question we asked. How is someone great? How do you remain vayichi when you're no longer here anymore? Because you have a legacy. How do you get a legacy like that? Because you take care of your body. Because you take care of your soul. Because you make sure that whenever a situation came up, you did what you had to do to make sure that you would not be affected negatively by it. To survive is not enough. Have a good Shabbos.